Hey guys, this is Yom Joshi with Superior North. Welcome back to my channel. Today we will be talking about the telecom giant Verizon. Verizon is primarily a wireless business, as about 70% of the company's revenue comes from its wireless business. Verizon has about 91 million postpaid and 4 million prepaid phone customers. It connects about 25 million data devices like tablets via its nationwide network, making it the largest US wireless carrier. In this video, we will be talking about the company's business segments, then reviewing the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios, and finally finding the intrinsic value of the company. So let's dive in and review Verizon.
Hey guys, let's start off by looking at the Form 10-K, which is the annual report that Verizon filed with the SEC. On page 5 of this report, the company talks about its business. Verizon Communications is a holding company that, acting through its subsidiaries, is one of the world's leading providers of communication, technology, information, and entertainment products and services to consumers, businesses, and government entities. The company offers data, video, and voice services and solutions on its networks and platforms that are designed to meet customers' demand for mobility, reliable network connectivity, security, and control. Verizon has two reportable segments that it operates and manages as strategic business units. The first is its Verizon Consumer Group, and the second is its Verizon Business Group. The Verizon Consumer Group provides consumer-focused wireless and wireline communications services and products. The Verizon Business Group provides wireless and wireline communication services and products, including data, video, and conferencing services, corporate network solutions, security and managed network services, local and long-distance voice services, and network access to deliver various IoT services and products. Next, on page 100 of this report, the company provides us a revenue breakdown across its operating segments. We can see that the consumer business segment brought in about $88.5 billion in its total operating revenue, and its business segment brought in about $31 billion as its total operating revenue. When it comes to the operating expenses, about 67% of the consumer segment's operating revenue was its operating expense. About 88% of the business segment's operating revenue was its operating expense. And finally, across all the segments, about 73% of the company's total operating revenue was its operating expense. Overall, the consumer segment's operating income was about $28.8 billion. The business segment's operating income was about $3.8 billion. And finally, the total reportable segment across these two segments was about $32.6 billion. Now that we have a brief understanding of the company's business and its two operating segments, let's review the company's fundamentals by focusing on its key ratios. Hey guys, now let's look at the key ratios. I'm on Morningstar looking at Verizon Communications Incorporated. Under key ratios, we have the financials. The first item on the list is the revenue. The revenue is the top line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that the company brings in via sales. Back in 2011, the company brought in about $111 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $134 billion. Over the past 10 years, the company's revenue has slowly been trending upwards. Next, looking at the operating income. The operating income is the amount of money that's left with the company once we subtract the cost of goods and operating expenses from the company's revenue. Back in 2011, the company's operating income was about $13 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $32 billion. Similar to the company's revenue, the company's operating income over the past few years has stayed fairly consistent. Next, looking at the net income. The net income is the bottom line of the income statement. This is the amount of money that's left with the company once it pays for the cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes. Back in 2011, the company's net income was about $2.4 billion. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $22 billion. Verizon's net income over the past 10 years has always been positive, which tells us that the company always reported a profit over the past 10 years. Ideally, we wanted the company's net income to be staying steady or increasing. And we can see that over the past few years, the company's net income has stayed fairly consistent. After that, looking at the dividends per share, back in 2011, Verizon's dividend was about $1.98 per share. And for the trailing 12 months, Verizon's dividend had grown to about $2.52 per share. When we look at the past 10-year trend, we can see that Verizon has been hiking its dividends every year for the past 10 years. And as shareholders, we want to invest in companies that is paying out consistent dividends. And it's even better if the company is hiking its dividends, as when a company pays out its dividends, it is a way for the shareholders to recoup the capital that they have invested in the company. Next is the shares outstanding. Back in 2011, the company had about 2,839 million shares outstanding. And for the trailing 12 months, that number had grown to about 4,144 million shares outstanding. Over the past 10 years, the company's shares outstanding number has increased, which tells us that the company is issuing more shares, which actually dilutes the existing shareholders' ownership within the company. Such a trend of the shares outstanding numbers is fairly common in the telecom sector, as we would see a similar trend with AT&T. When a company issues more shares, that's a way for the company to raise money through equity financing to help finance its growth. Next, looking at the book value per share. The book value is what we get when we subtract the company's total liabilities from its total assets. So essentially, the book value is the same as the shareholder's equity. Back in 2011, the company's book value per share was about $13.78 per share. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about $18.35 per share. Over the past 10 years, the company's book value per share has always been positive, which tells us that the company always had more assets than liabilities on its balance sheet. And ever since 2015, the company's book value per share has been increasing, which tells us that the proportion of the company's assets to its liabilities is increasing. Finally, looking at the free cash flow. The free cash flow is what we get when we subtract capital spending from the company's operating cash flow. Back in 2011, the company's free cash flow was about $13.5 billion. And for the year 2020, it was about $21.5 billion. Ideally, we want the company's free cash flow to be positive, staying steady or increasing. And over the past 10 years, Verizon's free cash flow has always been positive, which shows that the company's operating cash flow always exceeded the company's capital spending. However, for the trailing 12 months, we can see that the company's capital spending exceeded its operating cash flow, which is the reason why for the past 12 months, the company's free cash flow is negative. I will be using the 2020 free cash flow number of $21,450 million for my discounted free cash flow DCF analysis. Now let's look at the profitability of the company, focusing on the net margin. The net margin is the ratio of the company's bottom line to its top line, so it compares the company's net income to its revenue. Back in 2011, the company's net margin was about 2.17%. For the year 2020, it was about 13.88%. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 16.42%. What this means is over the past 12 months, every $100 that the company made in sales, by the time it paid for its cost of goods, operating expenses, non-operating expenses, interest on its debt obligations, and taxes, it had about $16.42 left as pure profit. Next, looking at the return on equity. The return on equity is the ratio of the company's net income to its shareholders' equity. Warren Buffett prefers to only invest in securities that have a return on equity of 8% or greater every year for the past 10 years. Back in 2011, the company's return on equity was about 6.45%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 31.02%. Ever since 2013, for majority of the years, the company's return on equity has been greater than 30%. The high return on equity numbers is because Verizon has higher financial leverage. Next, looking at the return on invested capital. The return on invested capital gives us an idea of how good the management is at allocating the company's capital and getting a return on that investment. Back in 2011, the company's return on invested capital was about 5.58%, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 10.9%. Verizon's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 3.54%, and since the company's return on invested capital is greater than its weighted average cost of capital, we can safely say that the management is creating value for its shareholders. Finally, looking at the interest coverage. The interest coverage is the ratio of the company's income to its interest obligations. So it gives an idea of how many times can the company pay off its interest obligations using its income in that calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's interest coverage was about 4.71. And for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 8.71. Benjamin Graham, the father of value investing, preferred to only invest in securities that had an interest coverage of 5 times or higher. Now let's look at the financial health and liquidity ratios. The first item on the list is the current ratio. The current ratio compares the company's current assets to its current liabilities. Ideally, we want to see the company's current ratio to be greater than 1.0, as that tells us that the company has enough assets to fulfill its liabilities over the next 12 months. Back in 2011, the company's current ratio was at 1.01. For the year 2020, it was about 1.38. And for the latest quarter, it's at 0.97. Next, looking at the quick ratio. The quick ratio is similar to the current ratio, except we disregard the inventory component. In other words, quick ratio is equal to current assets minus inventory divided by current liabilities. A quick ratio greater than 1.0 tells us that the company does not have to rely on selling its inventory in order to fulfill its current liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's quick ratio was at 0.84, and for the latest quarter, it's at 0.78. Next, looking at the financial leverage. The financial leverage is the ratio of the company's total assets to shareholders' equity. A financial leverage of 1.0 tells us that all of the company's assets are financed via shareholders' equity. A high financial leverage ratio tells us that more of the company's assets are financed via liabilities. Back in 2011, the company's financial leverage was at 6.41, and for the latest quarter, it's at 4.59. You can see that Verizon's financial leverage ever since 2014 has been trending downwards, which is certainly something that we want to see as shareholders. Finally, looking at the debt-to-equity ratio, this ratio compares the company's total debt to its shareholders' equity. Ideally, we want to see the company's debt-to-equity ratio to be less than a 1.0. Back in 2011, the company's debt-to-equity ratio was at 1.40, and for the latest quarter, it's at 2.17. Verizon's debt-to-equity ratio is higher than its competitor AT&T. Now let's look at the efficiency ratios. The first item on the list is the day sales outstanding. This number gives us an idea of how many days go by from the day the company recognizes its sale to the date actually receives cash for that service rendered. Back in 2011, Verizon's day sales outstanding was at 39 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 61 days. Ideally, we want the company's day sales outstanding number to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose day sales outstanding number is growing rapidly, as that tells us that the company may be aggressive with its accounting, as it's trying to recognize its revenue sooner so that it can inflate its income numbers on its income statement. Verizon's day sales outstanding number has slowly been trending upwards. However, it's not growing at a rapid pace where it's a cause of concern, but this is certainly something to keep an eye on. Next, looking at the day's inventory, this number gives an idea of how many days does Verizon's products sit in its inventory before they're sold. Back in 2011, the company's day's inventory was about 8.24 days, and for the trailing 12 months, that number was about 12.23 days. Ideally, we want to see the company's day's inventory number to be staying steady or decreasing, and we can see that Verizon's day's inventory number stayed fairly consistent from 2011 all the way through 2018. However, ever since 2018, the company's day's inventory number has slowly ticked up. Next, looking at the payables period, this number gives an idea of how many days does Verizon take to pay its suppliers. Back in 2011, Verizon took about 32 days to pay its suppliers. And in the year 2020, the company took about 51 days to pay its suppliers. Ideally, we want the company's payables period to be staying steady or decreasing. What we do not want to see is a company whose payables period is growing rapidly, as it tells us that the company may be aggressively holding on to its cash in order to artificially inflate its cash flow numbers on its cash flow statement. However, it does not seem that Verizon is playing any such cash flow tricks, as the company's payables period has stayed fairly consistent over the past few years. Finally, looking at the inventory turnover, the inventory turnover gives an idea of how many times does the company's product go through its inventory in a calendar year. Back in 2011, the company's inventory turnover was about 44 times. In the year 2020, it was about 32 times. And for the trailing 12 months, it's about 30 times. You can see that Verizon was more efficient with going through its inventory back in 2011 than it is today. Now let's compare Verizon's current valuation to that of the S&P 500. The S&P 500 is the aggregate of the top 500 companies in the United States. The first item on the list is the price-to-earnings ratio. Verizon has a PE of 9.4, whereas S&P 500 is at 24.0. The company's price-to-book is at 2.7, whereas S&P 500 is at 4.4. The company's price-to-sales is at 1.5, whereas S&P 500 is at 3.1. The company's price-to-cash flow is at 5.1, whereas S&P 500 is at 17.7. And finally, the dividend yield. Verizon has a dividend yield of 5.0%, whereas S&P 500 is at 1.5%. So we can see that on all these valuation metrics, Verizon is undervalued when compared to the S&P 500. Now let's look at the company's discounted free cash flow DCF analysis to find the intrinsic value of the company. Over here, I based the company's 2020 free cash flow number that I got from Morningstar, which was at $21,450 million. I'm assuming that Verizon's free cash flow will grow at 5% every year for the next 10 years. I'm using a discount rate of 10%. What this means is I expect this investment to give me a 10% return. I'm using a long-term growth rate of 2%. What this means is after the 10-year mark into perpetuity, I expect the company's free cash flow to grow at 2%. The company has 4,144 million shares outstanding and has long-term debt of $123,173,000,000. After taking all of these inputs into account, we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $50.3 per share. And when we compare this intrinsic value to the company's current stock price, which is about $50.49 per share, we can see that the company is neither trading at a premium or a discount to the intrinsic value. The way we calculate this intrinsic value is we look at what the free cash flows would be every year for the next 10 years. We sum up all those free cash flows, which come out to about $167.6 billion. Then we look at what the free cash flows would be after the 10-year mark in perpetuity. We sum all these up to get the intrinsic value to be about $331.5 billion. From this number, we subtract the long-term debt and divide by the shares outstanding to get the intrinsic value per share to be about $50.3 per share. Now, if we disregard the perpetuity component, in other words, if you think that Verizon is only going to grow for the next 10 years and then it'll cease to exist, then we get the intrinsic value without the perpetuity to be about $11 per share. And finally, if we disregard the debt, in other words, if you think that Verizon is going to grow into perpetuity, so there is no point for the company to worry about paying off its debt, then we get the intrinsic value without the debt to be about $80 per share. Now, we know that the company's weighted average cost of capital, also known as the company's hurdle rate, is about 3.5%. And if we add a 5% margin of safety on top of that and make our discount rate 8.5%, then we get the company's intrinsic value to be about $70 per share. And in this case, the company's current stock is trading about 30% below the company's intrinsic value. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway recently bought about $8 billion of Verizon stock. Verizon's stock price usually holds its ground when it comes to economic uncertainty, so you're less likely to see a drawdown when investing in Verizon than you would with a high-flying tech stock. One thing to note is that Verizon has high capital expenses numbers. In fact, all the companies in the telecom sector have high capital expenses. So when it comes time for high inflation, the company is bound to have higher capital expenses because when inflation goes overboard, then the capital expenses, the infrastructure, all of that is going to be more expensive to deploy. And in doing so, the company's profit margin is likely to dwindle. Hey guys, that is all I had for you this week. Hopefully you found this video on Verizon interesting. If you like this content, please do like, share, comment, and subscribe. And if you have any suggestions on which stock I should review next, please leave it in the comment section below. I'll greatly appreciate it. Thank you.